Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rota. We are so lucky to be joined today by Alex Prudhomme, the great-nephew of Paul Child and the co-author with Julia Child of the number one New York Times bestseller, My Life in France. He's now here to talk about his newest book, France is a Feast, the photographic journey of Paul and Julia Child. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Before we get started, a quick word from our podcast sponsor. For better tasting holiday meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands. From Saigon cinnamon and dill weed to bay leaves, garlic powder, cumin, and turmeric, Spice Islands maintains a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. And they use a craft approach to capture the volatile oil of each spice, which gives it its flavor. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes, and pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers.
This is such an incredible book, a really amazing collection of photographs and history, photographs that were taken by Paul Child that document his and Julia's time in France together. Julia has just been such an iconic figure and has held such a lasting place in the hearts and minds of so many home chefs. And I think a lot of the photos in this book really capture why. Can you talk a bit about sort of your life with Julia through the work that you've done and sort of what you seek to give people in this book that's really new?
Sure. Well, what's new is that this book covers the years 1948 to 1954, when Julia and Paul Child lived in Paris and Marseille. Paul was a diplomat. He was a cultural attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Paris and then down at the consulate in Marseille. And Julia, at the time, was an anonymous diplomatic wife who became strangely obsessed with cooking. La cuisine bourgeoise, which is the really tasty but not too fancy traditional French food that sort of enthusiastic amateurs, as she put it, aspired to cook. And so he brought her over in 48, and she knew nothing except how to boil water and burn the toast, didn't speak a lick of French, and was able to transform herself in those years into a worldly woman, a sophisticated cook, and somebody who was a wonderful writer and teacher. And so she really went through this transformation. She called it a flowering of the soul. So I grew up with Paul and Julia. As you mentioned, Paul was my grand uncle. He was the twin brother of my maternal grandfather, Charlie Child. And Paul and Julia never had kids of their own, but they were very generous people, and they treated my sisters and my cousins and myself as surrogate grandchildren. And so we spent a lot of time with them, either here in New York or up in Boston where they lived, or at our family place in Maine, or in California, where they often traveled, or at their little house in France. And so I never really had a cooking lesson per se from Julia, but I learned a lot just by osmosis, by standing next to her at the stove and having her, you know, enthusiasm kind of suck us all into the kitchen. And her method was to put everybody to work. She'd say, you do the dishes, and you do the salad, and you cut the cheese, and you go down and help Paul in the basement find the nice wine for dessert. For our dinner. And so she just made it fun, and she included everybody. And so I've tried to instill that in my children, to only partial success. But she was a great example of how to live one's life, both at home but also professionally. So when I was a kid, we used to watch Julia on television like everybody else on this tiny black and white TV we had in my parents' kitchen. And then she'd appear in their kitchen in the flesh. And as a kid, you think, oh, that's cool. She just walked out of the TV. And as I grew up, I began to understand what she was about. Every time you went to dinner with Julia, the restaurant would put you in the middle of the dining room at the biggest table for obvious reasons. And people would start to come up and talk to her. And I noticed that she was very gracious. She really handled people well, even when they were interrupting our dinner. And then, you know, she would talk with people for a while, and then she'd say, okay, we're going to eat now. And then she would, I'll talk to you later. You know, I'll sign your napkin. And then after the meal, she would invariably take us back to the kitchen, where she would talk to literally every single person in the kitchen. And she would generally start with the head chef, who either she knew or she knew his story. And then she'd work her way down the line to the poissonnier or the salad person, and then to the dessert station and the and the busboys, and then finally she'd get to the dishwasher, and that's where she'd spend her most time because she didn't know that person's story. And she was just super curious. And I think watching her in action is probably one of the reasons I became a journalist and a writer, because she just had so much fun. And she would, in a very friendly way, just interview people. And she'd say, now, who are you? And how did you get here? And, well, you know, what's your plan? And where's your family? And she just, you know, she was just a lovely person. But she was getting real information out of people. Likewise, every time she did a cooking show, she had a lot of fun with it. And people tend to focus on the humor. But actually, she always asked herself, well, what's the takeaway? What did people get out of this? What's the useful knowledge that they took from this particular episode of The French Chef or whatever it was, or what other program it was? And so there was an underlying seriousness, and that's one of the things that we try to get through in the book. The fun thing about this particular book is this is Julia in the late 40s and early 50s, a decade or more before she became famous as Julia Child. And she, you see her in almost every picture. She's smiling or licking a spoon or digging into something or playing with the cat. And you see that charisma is just innate. It was there. It wasn't an act. I can tell you from personal experience that the Julia you saw on television was the real Julia. Even if it was just the two of us in a room together, we would be cracking jokes. But then we talk about more serious things like politics and culture and, of course, what she was cooking and what I wanted to cook or eat. And so she was just a lot of fun. And she died in 2004, 2 days shy of her 92nd birthday. And I still miss her.
Before we go on, a quick word from our Clever Cookster sponsor. One of the best things about the holidays is spending time in the kitchen, creating delicious meals with family and friends, sharing recipes, conducting taste tests, swapping tips and tricks. Well, here's one piece of advice for your arsenal. For a noticeably richer flavor, opt for premium spices from Spice Islands. They sun-dry many of their spices and de-stem their chili peppers by hand to deliver the most authentic and intense flavors possible. And they also take the extra steps to ensure richer flavors, like waiting for their dill weed to bloom before harvesting, or milling their garlic to a true powder so it doesn't add any grittiness to your dishes. Better yet, they maintain a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. So whether you're looking for flavor adventure or simply better tasting meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes, including one for spiced maple carrots, a quick and simple side to complement any meal. That's spiceislands.com/clever and pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers. And now, back to our podcast.
I think that so many people, especially cooks in a younger generation, sort of can't imagine a Julia before she was Julia in the kitchen. And so this book really gives us this incredible glimpse into that time when she was, as you said, really that was blossoming. She was developing those skills and sort of using food as maybe an outlet for all of that energy that was already in her. Tell us some of the early stories from the book about sort of Julia coming into her own as a chef and as a cook and some of the early failures and some of those moments that are memorable.
Well, she famously would tell the story of the first meal she decided to cook for Paul. And by the way, Paul, this book is really Paul's book. Paul was a gourmet, and in the 1920s, he lived in Paris, and he was a sort of starving artist and as a tutor for the children of wealthy Americans, and he learned French. He was fluent in French. He became a gourmet and a wine expert. He knew Gertrude Stein and Ernest Hemingway, so he was really part of that expat generation over there, and so when he went back to France with Julia on November 3rd, 1948, that's the day they landed, he couldn't wait to show her his favorite place on earth. But prior to their departure from the States, she had decided to impress her new husband by cooking him brain simmered in red wine, which was a disaster. It came out as a goopy mess, and they threw it away, and they had, like, cheese and crackers for dinner. And And Paul said, well, I stuck with her anyway. I figured she'd, you know, she'd get there one of these days. And she's like, yes, thank heavens Paul still loved me. But she had a kind of a competitive side to her, and I think, and a certain pride. And she did not like to make mistakes like that. And when he took her to France, you know, she said, I was born hungry, not a cook. She'd been raised in an upper-middle-class family in Pasadena, California. They'd had a gardener and a chauffeur and a chef at the house, so she and her sister and mother hardly ever went in the kitchen. She just knew that she loved food, but she didn't really know anything about it. And so her first year in France, I think Paul sort of very consciously educated her about food and wine and developed her palate and really pushed her. And as you may recall from the movie Julie and Julia, she tried various other, you know, sort of hobbies. She was trying to find her way in the world. You know, she tried hat making and she tried playing bridge and she joined various clubs, and none of that was really satisfying. Eventually, she, after being in Paris for about a year, she signed up for cooking classes because they'd been eating at places from the three-star restaurant like Le Grand Véfour, which is still there behind the Tuileries Gardens, to all sorts of cafes and bistros and little tiny holes in the wall without even a name. And she just loved it. And she was like a sponge and just soaked it up and finally decided it was time that she learned how to cook, not only to please her gourmet husband, but also for herself. Mm-hmm. She had fallen in love with it. So she signed up for the Cordon Bleu, and immediately the headmistress, the evil Madame Brassard, put her at the top of the building in a beautiful sunlit room with two other ladies, and Julia immediately deemed this class not serious enough for her. She decided she wanted to get really serious about cooking, and so then Brassard sent her down to the basement where she joined some American GIs who were learning to cook on the GI Bill after the war. And we're sort of, you know, not impressed with this 6'2" Smith grad wearing pearls who came in. She was the only woman in the room, but she quickly established herself as the most serious cook there. And their teacher, Chef Max Bougnard, sort of took her under his wing and mentored her. And he began to teach her outside of class. They would go shopping together in the outdoor markets and at Les Halles, and they just hit it off, and she patterned her career on his teaching. He'd always say, you know, you've got to work hard, you've got to learn your technique, and if you make a mistake, don't apologize, and above all, have fun. And that was her mantra, and she would say that over and over again, and I think it was a very powerful, seemingly simple, but very powerful message that people could apply to cooking, as she did, or really to anything in life. And I think that's one of her great legacies, is this very optimistic, can-do spirit, this very American approach to French cuisine and to life.
I think that's what so many people have always loved about her, is that sort of unapologeticness, that right. Idea that, you know, there's no one can ever forget the clip where she drops the turkey on the floor and picks it right back up. And that idea, you just get right back on the horse.
Exactly. I mean, there was actually no turkey on the floor, I'll point out. Right. She was a little prickly about that. There was no turkey on the floor. There was no salmon flying through the air, right. Some people said. Actually, you've probably seen it in the movie, but also on TV. There was one episode where she dropped a potato pancake on the stove. And she said, well, you're alone in the kitchen. Who's to know? You know.
That's it.
And she
That's
scoops
right.
it back into the pan. And again, you know, she loved the humor of that, and she knew exactly what she was doing, because she kind of smiles when she says that. But underneath it all,
there is that seriousness.
There's that deep seriousness,
absolutely.
And she spent years working on that. So she made it look easy, but it really wasn't that easy. And for any of us to try to cook what she did in 30 minutes is really hard. And, you know, her timing had to be absolutely right, because they only had a certain amount of film, and, you know, they were on a schedule. And so she was a real professional, but she did it with grace and humor and, you know, intelligence, undergirded by this deep seriousness. And I can tell you a quick story about that. There's a famous show about Tarte Tatin, which is a beautiful upside-down apple dessert. So there's a show, you can see it, I think it's on the DVDs of her shows, where she pulls the tarte tatin out of the oven, and she flips the pan over onto a plate and unmolds it, and instead of the beautiful caramelized dome, she produces a puddle of beige mush. And she goes, oh, that's a little loose. And you can see her eyebrows going up to the top of her head. And she says, well, now you can just, you can show your guests how clever you are. And you scoop it back together and you sift some powdered sugar over it and you run it under the broiler. And she says, I think everybody should try it both ways, you know, the right way and the wrong way. And she made light of it. She didn't apologize. And she sort of saved the dessert. Well, the coda to that story is that many decades later, when she and I were working on her memoir, My Life in France, together, 2004, she was still annoyed by that tarte tatin. And like I said, she had this competitive edge, and she would sort of mutter once in a while, you know, I think those somebody must have sold me the wrong kind of apples, as if somebody, you know, the salesman had been trying to sabotage her, you know. So that shows you the two sides of Julia. Very humorous and graceful. Didn't let it bother her at the moment, but underneath it, she was annoyed that she had made a sort of unprofessional mistake. And yet, it was a great teaching lesson. And that's what she was about, you know. And people love that. People love to see her make mistakes and then correct it and not get too ruffled. Make a joke out of it and carry on.
I think it made people feel like they could do things in the kitchen that they absolutely would not have tried before.
Oh, for sure. She really empowered people, and not only women, men as well, and kids and everybody. So, yeah.
So I have to ask, what is your Julia recipe that she taught you to cook that you make for people?
Well, I make a lot of Julia recipes. I've now written 3 books about Julia. I've written My Life in France, which is her memoir. I've written France is a Feast, which is the book we're talking about, which is a book of Paul's photos, which is a companion volume to the memoir, but a sort of a visual extension and told from Paul's perspective. And then I wrote a book called The French Chef in America, which is about Julia in the 1970s. So in the course of writing 3 books, I've tried many Julia recipes. I think at this time of year, we're recording this in November, right before Thanksgiving. So, you know, boeuf bourguignon, you can't go wrong. Or maybe a coq au vin, which is a chicken stew. Both kind of hearty peasant dishes that sound complicated, but really are not. You know, if you can sauté some beef and find some tomatoes and onions and, you know, a few herbs, you're good to go with boeuf bourguignon. For dessert, that's also really hard, but I guess the tarte tatin is my personal favorite. My wife does a really good version of it. And then Julia's Reine de Saba, which is a flourless chocolate cake, which is really fun to make with the kids and super delicious.
Alex, thank you so much for coming to talk with us today.
My pleasure. Bon appétit.
Check out the book, France is a Feast, The Photographic Journey of Paul and Julia Child, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.